Hey everybody, Will Alexander from Will Alexander's Dog Show Tips, brought to you by Canine Chronicle TV. Today on the interview chair we have International Albright Judge Mr. Robert Dawson, also a pug enthusiast. So sit back and enjoy. Hi everybody. Today we have the pleasure of, in the interview chair, we have Mr. Robert Dawson, originally from Australia, now living in Korea. How are you, Bob? It's good to see you.
Yeah, it's great, Will. It's been a long time since I saw you.
Yeah,
I remember seeing you in Ring like last year sometime.
Yeah, well, in years ago, at Erie Shores, maybe.
Erie Shores. So I was in Canada, I think, about 2 years ago.
Well, we like having you, so. How are things there?
Yeah, it's great. Korea, of course, I've been here because of COVID for the last 6 to 8 months. I've not left the country. However, you know, we have had a dog show here. We have dog shows regularly. And I did judge here. Had a very good entry and some nice dogs. Okay. So, you know, it's the dog world is continuing quite nicely. But I think overall, you know, the place has progressed on much faster in the last few years. I first came to Korea maybe 10 years ago, 15 years ago to judge. And I've been here now, living here now 6 years, and it's much more active in the dog world than it was 15 years ago, yeah. Much more.
Oh, very nice. Mm. That's good to hear the dog world is still moving over there. Mm. All right, I'm going to get right into it, Bob. Tell me how you first got involved in dogs.
Well, you know, I come from Australia.
Yep.
And maybe Australia is fairly similar to Canada in some ways, is that, and I come from rural Australia in a place called Rockhampton, which is a small city on the Tropic of Capricorn. And basically, I was involved for many, many years in breeding and showing poultry, and particularly bantams. And I did a lot. I started off when I was 4 years old.
Wow.
I did that for many, many years, all throughout my high school years. And in fact, all throughout my primary school, as well as high school years. And of course, in Australia also, most judges, because you don't really have a chance to have individual judges for poultry and dogs and cats. So many of the judges in those days that have the same judge. And they would do one each day. One, you know, dog. It was always in. I think it was cats on Tuesday, dogs on Wednesday, and chooks on Friday, type thing. So they come and do the whole lot. And there was a very famous judge there called Billy Duckworth, and he was well known in Australia. He's been dead many years now, but he was very famous, and. You know, he kind of enthused me to also get into dogs as well. And a very close friend of his, an old guy named Taffy Jones, who lived nearby Rockhampton, he bred and showed pugs, but also German shepherds. He was one of the last people to bring in German shepherds into Australia from England. You know, of course, they were banned for many, many years.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, you couldn't bring them in. And so he was one of the last ones. So he had quite a nice line of the old English-type German shepherds. But he also had poultry and bantams. And so basically I got involved with him. And he also had pugs, which, of course, became my breed eventually. So, you know, it's kind of like they're not really mentors, but they're really just friends. Or you know, they have the kid around to look at the dogs or look at the chooks. And so eventually you learn things and you find out about such things as showing. But basically I started off in showing poultry, particularly bantams. And I always remember one of my famous, I did win best in show once with a bantam, which was under Billy Duckworth. So, you know, it was an exciting young life at that time to be involved with animals as well and to involve a lot of adults as well, because, you know, one of the things I found great about that was that I, in fact, would attend all of the chook club meetings and the dog club, all these different meetings where, you know, I was the youngest person there, but at least I learned how to communicate with the other groups. And it helped me even today. I look back on that, particularly with dog shows. The part I love about dog shows most as a judge is sitting around after the dog show, talking to the experienced and old and different other judges, different breed judges, and just talking about things which, you know, you'd never think about, never read in the book. That's the way you learn. Right. Yeah, and I find that still very much today.
I missed that part of it.
Sorry. Yeah.
How old were you at that point? How old were you, Bob, when you were attending these meetings? And
oh, when I started, I was 7 or 8 years old.
Wow.
Yeah, and then I eventually went to university at 17. I was one of these ones who finished high school rather fast, and I was at university. So I went to university and in a place called Townsville, which is not nearby. But the thing is, after I went to university, I decided to leave Australia, and I went to a place called Papua New Guinea. And I went to Papua New Guinea, and of course, you couldn't really do anything with chickens or with dogs or anything really. It's quite different.
What drew you there? You don't mind me asking.
I was originally I was a volunteer teacher. So look at a lot of Australians and Canadians, I'm sure, they kind of, when they finish their university, they like to go and explore the world. And exploring the world, of course, is quite interesting if you can go very close to your home, but still be exploring the world, because Papua New Guinea is and still is quite different to Australia. But I enjoyed it a lot, and I stayed there for quite a few years. And I basically got to understand different cultures and different ways of handling people and ideas. And that really decided me on becoming an international civil servant type person or international worker. So after I finished in Papua New Guinea, I went to the Philippines, and I stayed there for many, many years, 28 years.
Wow.
In the Philippines, I was there. I look a lot younger than I am. So I was there for 28 years enjoyed it a lot, and of course got very actively involved in the dog world. Right from the very beginning I was there, and as I said, I was into pugs quite early on, and then got involved in clubs and different other things. So it was kind of like quite an interesting period also at the very beginning, because at that time, of course, was politically, Philippines was not very stable at that time. We had I think there were something like 12 coup d'etats in about 10 years or something like that. When Marcos was thrown out. Because Marcos was very, very into dogs, his daughters were. His daughters had some extremely good pugs. They had some very good dogs. They used to be very much involved in the dog world. But of course, they left when Marcos left. The actual Philippines had a very long history of dogs. And the dog club in Philippines was one of the very first to start in Asia. And it was actually organized by the Americans who were there. As you must know, even when I was there, the Americans were thousands and thousands and thousands of Americans because they had all the bases. Mm. But the Americans there created the dog club in the 60s, early 60s. And they basically created the club and also got a lot of local people involved, some of them still there now. And so they basically developed the whole dog world. Yes. And actually, I was judging the States maybe 10, 15 years ago, and I was doing the chows. And I met the person came and said to me, he was involved in the Philippine club in 1964 or something. There's a long tradition of the US and the Philippines in the dog world as well. It was very, very interesting to see that.
So, your pugs. Tell me how you got started in your pugs.
Oh, pugs. As I said, Taffy Jones had pugs.
Was that your first breed to show? Was the pugs then?
The show, yes. I had like every Australian has is a fox terrier. Everybody has a foxy, and of course we had various dogs, but actually my very close friend, who kind of like we were born together, she has had corgis all her life, and still has corgis today. She still shows corgis very well. So I grew up a bit with corgis as well. She'd take her corgis to the dog show, and I'd take the chooks to the chook show, type thing. But basically, yes, for showing was the pug. And, I was very lucky because I got in contact with some very good pug people. Of course, I knew, the US had, in my mind, some of the best pugs. Some, of course, in England I also liked, but I felt that the quality at that time, 20, 30 years ago, was really in the East Coast pugs in the US. So I eventually contacted Charlotte Patterson, and I got one of her dogs called Manny, general manager his name was, and he did a lot of winning for me, and he did a nice job. And so Charlotte, husband Edward, of course, now has passed. I got to know them very well, and I, in fact, visited them many times in the US. And I also got to know people around them. And I, of course, Harry Smith, I also had a look at him. And Harry, of course, came to the Philippines. I invited him over to judge, and he had a great time over there judging.
He's a wonderful dogman, Dr. Harry.
Of course, yeah, he must have died quite a few years ago now. But he was very good, and I got to know him very well and learned a lot from him. So, these are the pugs I got, mainly US pugs. I did also look at getting, and I did show some Australian pugs. They were more the English type. I was quite eager to try to develop my own lines of pugs. And so I developed over quite a short period of time some nice breedings. And then I found the black pug. I always had fawns, and then I didn't really go for a black. But then I found blacks, and I find blacks pugs so much different in personality, because they're much easier to care for because of the coat's different, so the black pugs, of course, have always amazed me.
Oh, I didn't know the difference. I didn't know there was a difference in the colors. I knew that, like, obviously blacks, but I didn't realize there was a difference in their personalities or temperaments.
Absolutely. It's like the dachshunds, because the dachshunds, the three types of dachshunds all have different personalities.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
One thing I decided when I was going to become a judge was that I would at least have experience in each of the groups with a dog which I lived with, and if I could possibly even, take forward and breed and things like that. And so I chose various breeds that I really felt I needed to understand, not just simply from the point of view of the standard, but also the whole dog, the way they act, their attitude, how they're supposed to be in the ring as well as out. And so
that's part of type, as far as I'm concerned.
Yes, of course, yeah, very much so. But to live and be with the dogs, especially as a handler, you do that as well. But I've found many judges haven't done that. Many judges in the more traditional countries like Australia, or even in places in England, the judges have only ever had one breed, and that's what they see, that one breed, because they can do that. Of course, in Europe, in Europe you do 65 dogs a day. That's all, when you're critiquing. So you can judge forever, by just having two or three breeds in judging. But in other countries like Australia, you can't do that. Australia is like Canada. Most shows in Australia have 50, 60, 80 dogs, 100 dogs, you know, in the country places. In fact, a lot of those country shows have now stopped because they just don't have any exhibitors. So, you know, it depends on each country, but I still feel that the judges need to understand the dog from the essence of what it is in the house, in the yard type thing. Mm-hmm. And that's why I did with pugs, because I've had them all the time. But then other breeds I've had also in that sense in the time. But most of the dogs I've had, of course, all the dogs I have, I keep my dogs forever type thing. In fact, I have a place in Philippines still. I have a house there, a villa, and where I still have all my dogs. Okay. My dogs still live there. Yeah. So, you know, it's kind of, you know, once you get the dogs, because it's very difficult to let them go. I know some people do, but I'm not into that. And so we have the dogs here in the Philippines. So pugs were the original. And actually, I still love the pugs a lot, but I said the black pug is my favorite.
How old were you when you first started judging, Bob?
In my 30s, something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what was the first show you judged?
First show I judged, you know, in under my training scheme, of course, you start with one breed and then work up. So I did, local shows, but then also I did shows in, at the time when I was doing judging, one of the issues that I have, and I still have with a lot of training of judges, is that they don't get the exposure to breeds and dogs that they don't see each week. And so what we did was, at that time, I organized with somebody who was in Thailand, and we kind of swapped judges at that time. So basically, we would go to Thailand, a Philippine judge, go to Thailand, and then some Thai would come to Australia, to the Philippines. So the idea was to try and get people, expose them to dogs that they'd never seen before.
Yeah. Each country has their breeds they're strong in, so it's definitely, it's interesting that aspect of it. That's a good idea.
Yeah, and I think in Asia that's happening a lot more nowadays. In Asia, it's become much more of a, led by the FCI group, the Asia FCI group, and they're doing a lot of work on trying to get the, judges, local judges. Because in China, of course, they've also been very proactive on getting judges. You know, I've judged a lot in China, and every time you go to China, you also do discussions with judges, and you have them in the ring with you and this type of thing as well. So it's happening very, very... In China, of course, you know, the number of dogs that they'll eventually have, they have to have local judges. They just couldn't afford, I don't think, to bring in foreign judges all the time. And so they're doing that quite regularly now. And there's some very good judges developing in China as well.
Yeah, I was there about 5 years ago, and it was moving along really well. And they had some good dogs when I was there. So
certain
breeds.
They have like a lot of countries. You end up getting a few dogs at the top area, and then you might not get so much down below. So it's happening in all these countries. But because the Philippines had the longest history of dogs, along with Japan, and then Thailand's developed a lot. India's been going for many, many years. India has some very good breeds as well, their own local breeds. I did a show there actually in February, just before the COVID closed down. Mm-hmm. And I did a lot of big numbers of the local dogs around Tamil Nadu in the south. The caravan dogs and things like that. They had various breeds, but I had a large number of them, nearly 100 local breed dogs, as well as all the British breeds and American breeds.
Yeah, because in India, in my part world, anyway, I see a lot of Irish setters and beagles, and I, because they send me, or they, I'm friends with a lot of them on Facebook, so I see a lot of their dogs. Their dogs look good, too. They're doing a good job in preparing them, and looks like even type-wise, they're doing a good job.
So. Yeah. They have, of course, the longer-term British link as well, so you tend to, but there's been a few American dogs, North American dogs coming through, and of course also some of the Brazilian dogs, and you know, it's quite a mixture, but they also have very good German shepherds. When I was in the Philippines, Philippines had a very long history of the German shepherd, particularly with the German club, so we used to judge by that standard. So there's all this running around type thing and much more of the German style. But in Indonesia, we used to do that for Dobermans, Rottweilers, and German Shepherds, the Siga type shows for all the three working dogs. But here, of course, in Korea and most parts of Asia, they just don't have the working dogs. They're mostly having the smaller dogs.
As a judge, because you've judged all over the world, do you have certain dogs that are stuck in your head, in your mind's eye, that you wished you could have either been part of or owned?
There was, strange enough, there is one dog. I don't know its name or whatever, but many, many years ago, I judged in Germany at the at a very big show there, and I did Shih Tzu. And this Shih Tzu just came into the ring, and it was black and white. It just floated the ring. No strike. It was loose-handled. It just simply floated around the ring. It as though the body wasn't even there. It's unbelievable. I always remember that dog. And unfortunately, since I've seen that dog, whenever I see a Shih Tzu, I will compare it against that dog, in the sense of, the standard. But, the other dog, which I really, really, really kind of got to appreciate in my mind, was a dog I judged in 2002. Now, I don't know if I remember this dog because of the timing or not, but I was in West Virginia, and that just in 20, because the I judged actually the dog in late 2001, 9/11. I happened to be in Washington, D.C. for work, and also I was going to do a dog show as well, and I did the dog, so I was able to take the train from Washington, D.C. To Connecticut area and things like that. Anyway, but basically I went there and I gave best in show to a magnificent, what I thought was a magnificent miniature black poodle. And name was Surrey Spice Girl.
Oh, yes, of course, yes.
And then the following year, she won Westminster.
Yeah.
That dog, I could not believe it when I saw it. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And I gave her the best in show. And, so she was, these are the two dogs that I really remember judging. Seeing other dogs, I've seen many dogs that I really appreciate a lot. I've done shows also in England as well. And another dog I really liked was several of the Whippets in England. I am very much, I think that they've got a nice part to them. I've also judged, of course, a lot of Basenjis. Mm-hmm. I have a Basenji last year I judged the Canadian Basenji Nationals.
Yeah, I was there, yes, yeah.
Yeah, and the Australian. I did the Australian Basenji Nationals as well last year. So I did the two lots of Basenjis. nationals in that time. Yeah, so it's quite nice. I do like doing specialty shows.
Mm-hmm.
I know doing all breed shows is the norm in most for all breed judges. You know, 1 year in 2000 something to 4 or 5, I remember I did 7,000 dogs. I judged 7,000 dogs that year.
Oh wow!
I think 5 continents.
So you're for all groups then, Bob?
Yeah. I've been all breeds for a while now, but also for the US AKC and then also FCI as well. But you know, of course, as you rightly said, you end up doing certain breeds because those are popular in each country type thing. And in Asia, it's very similar, the breeds that you do. But I do like doing even, you know. I once did a specialty, the Russian Terrier, Russian Toy Terrier.
Okay.
I don't know if they're recognised in Canada yet.
No, they aren't. No. So.
But anyway, they are now in Australia and many other countries. But at that time, I did it in Moscow. I was, I think, 1990 something. I did a show in Moscow. And I did them, and I had literally, you know, they were everywhere. I think there must have been 100 of them. And I don't know if you know the breed well, but
no,
the breed has yet to stabilize, shall we say. And so it's got a lot of different types. And depending, you know, its variation is there. And so... you know, I really felt that I had to just go for a certain style, but I found some very nice ones. There were some extremely nice ones there, but the issue was that there was so much variation. But yeah. Doing a specialty like that, it really makes your mind, you know, go in. At that same time, there was actually a Neapolitan Mastiff. I didn't do it, but there was Neapolitan Mastiff specialty there as well, and there were about 160 of them.
Wow.
And I really enjoyed those, seeing them.
So you didn't judge those, you just watched those?
That'd be
something to see 100 of those or 100 more of them.
Mm. Wow. We used to have in the Philippines, there was a guy who bred them in the Philippines, and we would get 20 or 30 of them. They're actually quite a nice dog. So each place has its own breeds. You know, the Tibetan Mastiffs in India and the ones in China, of course, are quite different.
Mm-hmm.
And Tibetan Mastiffs, I was in Lahore is in Pakistan, on the other side is in India, and there's a person there who breeds absolutely beautiful Tibetan Mastiffs, and he was in partnership with somebody in the US. Unfortunately, she died, but he has a lot of his dogs in the US as well. And I spent a lot of time going over the dogs and in his kennel, quite a grand kennel. It's good to be able to go to breeders like this, especially these breeds, which are not as popular everywhere else,
mm-hmm.
and just go over them. So as a judge, you've always got to find, opportunity and take opportunity as it comes to get to know breeds better. In each area, which I find very, very, very important.
Well, I think that once you're in this sport, you're a student for life, it seems, so.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, that's why one thing, I've told other, the younger judges when we get together, is I said, you'll never stop learning. You know, every day you will go to a dog show and you will understand something better. You might understand, you might have understood it before, but you understand it better when you, you know, either talk to somebody or you get to feel something or do something, you know. And I think also people have to realize you can't judge from outside the ring. You know, people think, oh, you know, you can judge from outside the ring. There's no way.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm much more of a hands-on person.
Yeah, and it's interesting because you'll watch a large, even when you are watching, and I'll sit and watch a large specialty, and things start to click. You start to see what the essence of the breed is, and it starts to click in your mind what you think you should be looking for. So
yeah, I went to do that a few years ago, a long time ago. I went to the Louisville circuit.
Oh, that's
and awesome. In Dalmatians, 1,001 Dalmatians. They had, I think they said they had, you know, 20 or 30 national specialties or something. I spent a lot of time with the Dalmatian one, but also with the others as well. It's quite other specialties. There were some quite nice dogs.
That's so you judge there then?
No. I just went there to see it.
Okay.
I was judging somewhere else. And in the States, and then I kind of just dropped by.
What have been some of your most memorable assignments then?
Every assignment I find exciting.
That's good.
One thing I've learned is that, in fact, one thing which was told to me many, many years ago is it doesn't matter if it's in the middle of nowhere. Those people have paid the same money to bring their dog for your opinion, so you've got to give them the same as you give somebody at a big top-notch show. And I realized that many times over that I always if a club asks me to come and it's in the middle of nowhere, I always accept it. I don't care about I know some people feel that, you know, it's the same old show, but it's not. Every show is different and every show has people who really want to have a show. So it's always, you know.
That's sort of, when I was, as a handler, as a young handler, I was given some advice, and it was by Jane Forsythe, and she always told me, I showed primarily up here in Canada, and she said, a best in show is a best in show, no matter where you are, because by the end of the day, they usually end up with seven or really good dogs, and when you win that best show, it could be over 100 dogs or over 1,000 dogs or over 2,000 dogs. It's still a best of show, and to appreciate that win no matter what.
But having said that, I think what makes a show for a judge as opposed for an exhibitor or for a committee member is simply just the simplicity or the ease with which you're handled by the club. Mm-hmm. People have got it on their mind, the dogs, the judge has to think through things. It can be stressful and it can be physically stressful as well. And I think that, you know, judges appreciate clubs that actually say to them, well, you know, do you really want to go out for dinner tonight? If you're doing it, say, a 2 or 3 day show,
yeah,
or maybe we'll just have one dinner at the end of the thing or something like that. I think this is always there are some little things which some clubs have found and do. They don't try and feed you 500 different cakes and all this stuff. That they appreciate that you are there to judge, and that you need some quiet time, some relaxation time outside the ring. So the club, when I judge, when I think of clubs that I've judged with, okay, I think of the dogs, but the exhibitors, if they're good and, you know, friendly, but also I think of the clubs, and the clubs appreciate the judge's needs as much as everybody else's needs. Mm-hmm. I did judge in one country, I won't name it, there was actually my daughter, who you've probably met as well, but she came with me, we were in in this country. The morning it was raining, but of course the show started on time, 9 o'clock, and I had 140 dachshunds to do, and I had to weigh them.
Oh.
Yeah, so it was a requirement. Then, of course, after I, after about an hour, it started to hailstones came down. But we continued judging.
Show must go on, yeah.
Show must go on. And then of course, the ground was so messy, the dogs couldn't stand. Okay, that was okay, I don't mind. I've judged in snow and I've judged everywhere else. But then what happened was, so I finished judging in mid-afternoon because it took, you had to critique everybody as well and things. Then, of course, I said, oh, it looks, are we going to have any lunch then? And I said, oh, we're sorry. They had lunch before and all the food is gone. And then they said, oh, and you're also going to be judging three groups as well, which they hadn't put on hadn't told me before. So, and so I always remember that show. I vaguely remember the dogs, but I do remember the things which, would have made made the day a little bit better for everybody. So as a judge, and I really like clubs that really appreciate their judges and actually think of the judges well. For sure. I've run many, many shows in the past. And one thing that I hope they can say is that they actually, we did the right thing by them, by the judge. But that's something which we tend to find. But
I hope Canada looks after you well each time you come.
Always, always, always do. Whenever I judge, I try to also, find out what the dogs are in that area, this type of thing. The other thing which I always advise young judges on, or judges, other judges, is that when they go to a show, you have to judge to the standard, to the system, and to the country's way. I find some judges basically spend a lot of time saying, "Oh, we should do it this way. It should have been done that way because that's what we've done it. Why have they changed that? Or this standard is different." And I think, I spend a lot of time before I go to judging. I always read this, try to read all the standards in for that country. Mm-hmm. because they are quite different. Quite different from Canada and the US. You're going there to judge the show. And the other thing is also the system. Systems are there because they're regulated or rest of, which dogs come in on time, this type of thing. So I've always felt that those are two big things that you, as a judge, you must just fundamentally accept. You've read the standards and you know the system of judging.
That country, I agree, because we do get a lot of, we'll get some judges over from Europe and they'll almost fight you on things because it's not how it's done in their country. It doesn't make the day enjoyable at all sometimes.
And also it upsets the ups. The other thing, of course, is I, as a judge, I notice a lot. If the handlers and the others in the exhibitors are upset, the dogs will be upset. Mm-hmm. It goes straight down the line, straight down the lead. And you'll see, and you won't get the best out of the dogs. And actually, ultimately, that's what a judge wants to do, is make sure the dogs, show themselves effectively and all the rest. And so that's very, very important. Help them move it forward. But it's key to those basic standards.
You kind of answered my question, but I was hoping, for the advice for young judges, you touched on a lot of things. Is there anything else you would want to give them advice on? How long have you been judging now, Bob?
I've 35 years now.
Now I'm trying to add up how old you are, so I'm just kidding.
I'm getting there. But, because I don't think of myself as an old judge. No. No, I'm very active and young. But I think that young judges, and you know, I've talked a lot of about, when I talk about young judges here, I'm thinking of in Asia, you have a lot of judges, as I said, who have had limited experience on certain breeds. And that what they should do is, you know, and I think that also in some, even in Australia to a degree and others, it's getting that exposure to other breeds, you know, which is quite important. But not simply a book learning, but, you know, actually going and touching the dogs and feeling and going over them and things like that. Now, in Australia, we used to have before, because and still have, you know, these, you know, shows where you, you know, open shows, that is called. But I hear from a lot of people they're not as popular as they were in the past, and you know, maybe not getting the number of dogs and things. So you have to find a way that you can go to the breeders and find them. The other thing is that I think the big issue with young judges is that getting them to understand that they have to appreciate every dog that comes in the ring. You know, I'm you know, if judging styles are either positive or negative. You either start with zero and work up to 100, or you start with 100 and work down to zero. And different countries have different ways of doing it. I'm a zero upwards to 100 when I'm, you know, when I'm thinking through the dogs, through the standard. Mm-hmm. You know, it's important that you understand what are all, you know, what are the four or five basic, what makes that the breed? And give that the weighting and work up that. And then the other parts, the movement, or, you know, the various other, you know, the so-called five parts of a judging, you know, everything from types through to temperament, et cetera. So the idea is to move through those things that make that breed a breed. And then what is the fine tuning of that? Because basically every dog you have to go over is, you have to sort of, in your mind, how far is it towards the standard, towards the 100? And that's the way I work it.
That's a very positive way of looking at it. That's good. I like that.
Yeah.
It's so, yeah, so because, easy to, you know, fall into a fault judging and just to work your way up and go through all the virtues of the dog. That sounds like the best way to think.
Yeah, it helps you because it makes you find the best dog, the best one which represents the breed standard. Whereas, you know, in other places, when you're going down the list with, you know, and saying, okay, it's got, you know, one missing tooth, so minus, or, you know, it's too many subparts.
Right.
And you end up not necessarily with the best dog. You might have the dog which ticks off all the boxes, but maybe not the best overall dog because it doesn't bring out the best points.
I agree. I find, I've always said that anybody, even sitting at ringside, can pick out what's wrong with most dogs other than their mouth and whatnot. But,
yeah.
You know, that's not their, your job is, well, I feel a judge's job is to tell us what's good about the dog, not what's wrong with the dog.
Yeah. And so that's one thing I would tell them. The other thing is, which I think I'd still like to emphasize again, what I was saying before, is that, you know your standards really well, but don't just know the standards. What I did in the Philippines for many years, we used to run training courses for all the judges and exhibitors together. And we'd get many of the old specialist judges who would come in, or the judges who would come in, specialist judges, and they'd give a lecture on their particular breed. And, you know, there are many breeds which colour can be very, very difficult to understand. Unless you understand that colour, you also are not going to, because, you know, the colour, of course, of a breed has been determined for a certain reason, especially in the hunting breeds and few, you know. Mm. So the issue is that understanding those fine points, not that there is a colour, you know, there's a fawn or whatever. It's actually, you know, what is that color? What are you looking for in a proper conditioned coat and things like that? So those types of things are quite critical for a judge to get, every judge, but newer judges have to go and listen and talk about that. The thing, like, for example, if a poodle is, what is a silver poodle? You know, it might sound very simple, it's silver, but actually, if you really talk to the poodle people, silver has a very set, understanding. It's not a dark white or a light blue, you know. So, you know, you have to know what they want, what the breeders have done for many, many years and developed as a judge. You only have two minutes or even less than that in some cases to actually do the judging. Exactly. So, that would be my third biggest one, which I think is the biggest peeve for many exhibitors. Is judges who take too long to come to the wrong decision. I've seen judges in some places where they've sent a dog around 14 times, the exhibitors, everybody else, you know, if you make it, you have to, again, because you're not looking at the upwards, you're looking at it, you're trying to find fault.
Trying to talk yourself out of something. So.
Yeah. So it's very, very important for judges to also keep good timing, to understand timing and to keep good timing. And actually, to a degree, that's why I like doing specialties. I like spending more time with the same breed. Because, you know, I suppose the last thing, which is I reiterated before, was the problem is basically you have a situation where judges are under a lot of stress in the ring, and they're under more stress if they've got 25 different breeds coming in 1 hour, you know, just thinking of the standards for each breed. So, you know, get used to that, but because that's going to be the realities of most judges, but always look forward to doing a nice specialty, and then you can, you know, really go into it and be done.
Like a very famous judge once told me, we were talking about a certain judge that was taking too long, and he turned to me and she said, "They don't get any better, William. They just get older."
Well, I've unfortunately done two shows, where one in England and one in Australia, where the judges were, sorry, not in England, it was in Holland, it was a Rotterdam show, Rotterdam and Australia in Sydney, where, you know, basically I was told, okay, it's because I'd finished my thing. They actually just took the final breeds off both judges because they were just too slow. They wouldn't get to the finish. And so one of them was even worse than that. One of them, I did her final set of breeds, and then I also did her group, and she still hadn't finished. And then she came across after, and her group had already finished. I'd already done the group. But, you know, it's not a very nice thing. But the thing is, it's clubs in some countries just do that. There's just no mucking around. Yeah. They can't afford to have basically people there till 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night. It just doesn't work that way. And so basically they will just take the dogs off the judges.
That's interesting. I wish we could do that over here sometimes, but we can't. I have a question for you, Bob. If you could have dinner with a dog show person that has passed, who would you choose to have dinner with?
Very simple. That was very, very simple. Flora McKenzie.
Oh, yeah. I love Flora. She was wonderful.
I judged... I've judged in her up in that Nova Scotia. Yeah. I've judged there, I think, five times. I love it. But the reason I say that is because Flora taught me a lot about particularly Shih Tzu and also Maltese and Pekingese. You know, I'm kind of known as a Pekingese picker. I judged, you know, I don't know if you know the Pekingese breeder in England, Yucky. Mm-hmm. Anyway, they in 1 year. It's Y-A-N-K-E-E. It's in 1 year. I gave a best in show to one of their dogs in Australia, two places in Australia, but different dogs that they'd sent to Australia. And I gave another one in a best in group to one in Finland or somewhere like that. And this is the same breeder. They just produce these absolutely magnificent Pekingese. You know, when you pick them up, they're picked correctly up and their faces, the whole lot, you know, so well, you know, lovely small male, you know, who's just, you know, arrogant as hell and sound as sound. So, you know, I like Pekingese, but it's amazing how somebody is implanted on that. The other one who, and so she taught me a lot about what, you know, about the coated breeds. She knew her coated breeds well. Many people don't know coated breeds, I don't think. They, you know, because they basically don't go over the dogs so much. You know, I always remember Flora telling me when she, you know, she put I think it was a Shih Tzu on the table, and she said, okay. She went over the dog and she said, I know exactly how it's going to move. And she told me how it's going to move. And it moved that way. You know, she didn't need to see it move to know how it's going to move because she knew the structure, et cetera. So that's, you know, that's why I really appreciated her. And, you know, she was a great person. Because she was a New Zealander, you know that.
I did not know that.
She came from New Zealand. And she was a stewardess on the planes, and the husband, he was the pilot. But I judged with her in New Zealand, in Australia, all over the world. I've judged with her, but she's a real great person.
Oh, we loved her. She was great.
Sometimes it looked a little crazy, but too great.
that was part of the fun of her. Was she was.
I always remember being picked up at what's that airport in Nova Scotia? It's the international airport there. Anyway, Halifax. Halifax, yes. So she picked me up, and you know it was in the middle of winter, and the snow and ice and everything, and she was going along about 100 miles an hour trying. And I thought, oh, you know, will we ever make it? Yeah, but no, a great person. There are so many, many great people like that. You know, I do like, to a degree, the European shows because you get a lot more judges. You know, I've judged several shows in Finland, for example, and in other parts. But in Finland, there's one show that had 170 judges, you know, over, you know, there was, I think, somewhere 7,000 dogs or something. But it basically 100, because you can only do in Finland 65 dogs a day, and so you know you had lots of judges, and you know so it's it's very nice because then you can sit and talk to really specialist judges. Mm-hmm. Another one who I'd like to have dinner with, Hans Lettinen. I don't know if you know Hans. Yeah, Hans would have been one of your European judges telling you how to fix things. he was a great guy. I really liked him as well. He really did a lot of good things for the dog world, I think, you know. He may have been a bit you know, rough, a bit whatever, but he actually, I think, had all the good things in mind. He had some good dogs as well, you know. He had some good terriers and things like that in his day. So, you know, I enjoyed those. So those would be two of the people. Flora, of course, Harry Smith, I really enjoyed as well, being around him.
I know it's getting late there. I'm sorry. One last question for you. If you could give advice to the 20-year-old Robert Dawson, what advice would you give him?
I think that the biggest advice I would give is to do what I've done, but do it better. Because in many cases, what I did, like, for example, went overseas, I learned things from many people, but I was always a little bit apprehensive. I am not your big gregarious person. I tend to sit and listen to things. I think in the judging area and in the dog world area, I should have been a bit more proactive in doing those things, in the sense of understanding where I want to be. Sometimes I think I fell into things rather than necessarily planned them out, which is not that bad. But I think in today's world, it's really a bit more of a planning things out, making sure you will get what you want and what you think is needed quicker. It's not easy. It wasn't easy. It's never been easy for doing any of these things, but it's getting harder. The realities of life are there's less people involved in dogs now. There's less dog shows. There's less, therefore there's less appointments and less things. So you really need to be a bit more outward going, a bit more noticed. I've tended to do things, but I think maybe I just do it a bit harder, a bit more in try to get there. That's what I think, how I advised myself at that time. I'm not saying that I've done everything right. In fact, I'm not really so. But the things that I would like to have done better, I should have done better.
Hmm. Well, we've noticed you, Bob, so don't worry about that part of it.
I must say I have enjoyed coming to Canada. I can't remember the first time. I must have come to Canada maybe 20 years ago. I once did a very strange set of shows. I did three shows in Vancouver area, I think with Donna. Donna's another person, but she hasn't passed. But she's another person I've got on, Donna Cole. I did three.
Before I used to use the same judges a lot, and they would have
yes.
on the West.
Yeah, so I did three shows in Vancouver, I think. Then I did three shows in Columbus, Ohio, or somewhere like that, some place in the US. And then I did another three shows the following weekend. I think it was in Toronto area. What's her name? In Toronto.
Was that the Valley show?
The Erie, like.
Oh, Erie Shores. I think you did the TradeX shows, which was Lower Mainland. Then you came east, and I think you may have judged the Credit Valley show, one of our last shows of the year.
Okay, yeah.
Was it?
Yeah.
Was it a really relatively big show?
Yeah.
I think it was Credit Valley then. Yeah, that's right. I've done
quite a lot of shows in Canada, in all places. I like actually the Red Deer.
Yeah.
Shows. I did Red Deer when they only had, we had 3 days of shows and three judges or something like that. It was a very, I think 300 dogs. And that was maybe 10, 15 years ago. And I've done it, I think, four times. And every time I've been there, every second or third year, they've got virtually double their numbers. The last time I went there, their show was really quite huge. They had quite a large number of dogs. Red Deer, of course, is in the middle of the two, Edmonton and Calgary. But I really love those people there. So I think four times I've done that show.
Yeah, they have fun out there.
Yeah, it's a good. They're good lot of people. But that's what you get in most places. Most places there are good lots of people whose only concern is to have a nice show and not too much of hassles and things. That's important.
For sure.
And also for the judge.
Yeah. I won't keep you any longer, Bob. I know it's getting late there. I really appreciate that you put this time aside for us. It's good to see you and catch up, and let our dog world over here know what you're up to, since you can't leave and judge over here right now. But hopefully our world will open back up again soon, and we'll get to see everybody again.
Yeah, we hope so too. I think that's very, very important. Okay, good.
All right, well, you have a good
night. Thanks very much.
And thank you. We'll talk to you soon.
Well, thank you, Bob. It was good to see you. It looks like you're keeping yourself busy during this COVID time. If you like what we're seeing here, we're doing here, make sure you press the like, share, and subscribe button. If you want to send me a message or ask me some questions, go to dogshowtips@gmail.com. Or if you just want to find out what's happening in Will's world, go to willalexander.net. Until next time, thanks.